Guardian Podcasts are partnered with audible.co.uk. For a free download, be sure to check out guardian.co.uk/audible, where Guardian listeners can choose any audiobook for free. See the page for more details.
Hello, it's Music Weekly. I'm Alexis Petridis.
And I'm Kieran Yates.
Coming up in this last podumentary before our summer break, a near-death experience with The Invisible, three new tunes in Singles Club, a live track from the new band of the day, plus the lowdown on Peaking Lights.
All here on Music Weekly from The Guardian.
Joining us this week, Rebecca Nicholson.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello. You all right? You look surprised.
As if you thought we were just going to sit there and not say anything.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks.
You went to Lovebox. How was that?
It was good. The highlight, obviously, was Grace Jones's backside.
Which was,
you know, any weekend that you can say, well, the highlight of my weekend was seeing Grace Jones's backside is probably a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. No, totally. She's 64 years old.
Apparently, her
bum is still in good repair.
It's remarkable.
Is it?
As bums go, remarkable. They kept zooming in on it. She would turn around and do a move, which Kieran has just informed me is called a twerk.
Yep.
She would do a twerk.
The verb to twerk.
So she would do a twerk.
Yeah, or she was twerking.
She was twerking.
Yeah.
She was twerking. And the camera would zoom in, and she would get the largest cheer I think I saw of the whole festival.
We should all be so lucky as to cause a crowd of thousands of people to cheer by showing them our buttocks when we're 64 years old.
And to be able to pull off nothing but a thong at 64 years old is quite extraordinary.
I couldn't pull off a thong there, nothing but a thong. No one will pay to see that.
At the moment, so I thought this was the end goal.
No, obviously, that's not the end. I don't want to repulse humanity.
I just want to lose a bit of weight. At least a mankini, you know.
No. So I interviewed Dizzy Rascal this week.
He's very nice.
He's very upbeat character these days. It's very odd because I last interviewed him in 2003. Quite different experiences.
He's very polite now.
He's very polite. He's very friendly. When I met him, he was kind of erring. You've got to say the you know, he was only 18. He was erring on the surly side of perfect. You know, I mean, he wasn't really super friendly, and now lives in Miami.
Does he?
Yeah, lives half the year in Miami and the half a year in Kent, and seems to have this very glamorous lifestyle in Miami that he was telling me about. But he said it's good to come back to Britain because he said, you see, the thing is, when I'm in America, I love the way that Americans celebrate success and they celebrate money. But when I'm in Britain, I miss that. So if I'm not in Britain, I miss the British Reserve. I miss the opposite thing. And he goes, you know, I'll say this to you. It might be fun to throw money over the body of a naked midget in one of the most notorious gangster strip clubs in America. But there comes a time when throwing money about ain't such a good idea, even if the midget's willing.
Well,
I was like, right on, Dizzy. Brilliant. He played me some of his new album as well, which is very good.
Good.
Actually, it sounds like G-Funk. It sounds most unlike his last record, or bits of it sound like his last record, but yeah.
Has he got an American accent yet?
No, he's still. That's the brilliant thing about it, because the music is all this super smooth G-Funk. This guy, Fred Reck, who worked on Dr. Dre's 2001, he produced it, but he's still over the top of it doing those kind of vocals that Dizzy Rascal does. That sort of like, well, you know, that sort of
good one.
I like having him here in the studio. I mean, but you know, I went back and listened to Boy in the Corner the other day, and that's what he's that's pretty much what it's like.
I think that's my second favourite impression of yours next to Wild Beasts.
I'm not going to do Wild Beasts. Right. No. What about you, Kieran?
I'm just really excited to see Nicki on Monday. I think that's Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj, yes.
It's going to be brilliant.
Excellent.
Excited.
Yeah. It's going to be mega. I got sent a video on YouTube of a little girl about 5 years old rapping a Nicki Minaj.
Sophia Grace and Rosie. Alexis, come on.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Oh, God. Have they got a deal? Are they signed? Universal signed them 6 weeks ago.
They've got a slot on the Ellen show.
So they're always on TV in America.
Oh. Well, that'd be why I haven't seen them, because I live in Brighton, not America.
But they're from Essex, and, you know, they're around.
Are they from Essex?
Yeah. And they, you know, they had a period when they first came out about a year ago where they were doing
really underground, and they were signed to Butters.
Yeah, they did all like the morning shows, didn't they? They were really good.
I worry Fame's going to go to their heads. I know. I think they've taken it too far.
Oh, man. Oh, well, there you go. Oh, well,
let's get them on the show.
We should get them on the show, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Exploit some children for the purposes of the Guardian podcast. Let's do that. That'll make us feel better about ourselves. Kieran, you've been talking to the Invisible.
Yes.
How were the Invisible?
They were great. It wasn't all of them. We were losing a member because he was practicing with Grace Jones.
Yeah, that's what he told you.
Yes. Well, they were really excellent. It was nice to talk to Dave, and he was in good health following his near fatal.
So he got an electric shock on stage, and he broke his leg in two places as a result of the electric shock.
Yes, wow. That's right. But yeah, it was, you know, he was sort of unconscious for a few minutes, I think, and he was shaking, and he was saying it was, you know, real agony. And, you know, now he's okay. He was in a cast when he came in to record, to talk to us, but he was saying, you know, the sort of the time, you know, now he's kind of, he might have heart palpitations and all kinds of things.
So. Well, he might be permanently injured.
Yeah, no, yeah, shot. Definitely. So it was really, really near fatal, very close. So it's good to see him in high spirits, despite that.
Was he quite perky?
Yeah,
I mean,
he
you
was.
Don't want, I mean, it's a sad story, but you don't want someone coming in and, you know, bringing everyone down.
Well, as perky as you can get, because we were talking about the album Risper, which is obviously sort of written to sort of rewrite his mourning about the death of his mother. So, you know, have you heard the album?
Yes,
I mean, you know, there is that kind of melancholy that sits all the way through. But it was, you know, it was good, and he's really lovely to talk to, and he had some interesting things to say.
Okay, well, let's have a listen.
So, Dave, good to see that you're sort of in high spirits today. How are you faring? Are you okay? Tell us about it.
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. We've had an amazing few weeks. Just it's been such a relief to get home. And, you know, I broke my leg in a couple of places and I've had an operation and that's all gone really well. And everything sort of seems to be healing up physically really well. But I was just so lucky that it wasn't more serious than that, really. I don't know, we're just, we sort of can't believe we've come through it so lightly on one level, but yeah, very glad to be here in person.
Good.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, you're sort of still smiling. You're having a Dave's Alive party tonight, right?
That's right. The first thing I said I wanted to do when I got back was celebrate being alive, because, you know, in the middle of the electric shock, I remained conscious all the way through it, and there was definitely a point about halfway through where I felt I wasn't going to make it. So yeah, it changes your perspective on everything, an experience like that. And well, I mean, I'm in favour of celebrating life at any given opportunity. I don't mind celebrating my own or other people's. But yeah, it felt like it'd be really important to sort of, yeah, just to celebrate being here and to be with loved ones. And the fact that that coincides with our album coming out is kind of feels perfect, really.
The album's been really well received as well, so which is sort of a nice thing to come back to, I suppose. How's that been for you?
Brilliant. I mean, it's really affirming, you know. We've spent ages making this record and we've been through a lot making it. It's been a real journey for us. You know, we get to the end of that process and, you know, the three of us were very happy with that record, and, you know, you just hope that everyone else feels the same way, you know.
Because it's quite a risk when you write something that is, you know, it is quite emotive, and, you know, it's sort of rewriting. I know that you sort of mentioned rewriting the grief that you felt after your mother passing away, and it, sometimes when you're sort of writing within the midst of that, it can feel quite internalised and it can feel quite like it's your own experience. So to write that and to have people positively respond, you know, not something that's just been created inside your own head, and, you know, it still translates for other people and it still resonates in other people's experience, must be really nice for you.
Yeah, I think you've sort of summarised it perfectly, really, because throughout the process, I think, well, I certainly was questioning my motives for doing something like that, expressing something so personal. And, you know, the sort of the thought of making it public on one level, I found it really frightening. But I guess I was just driven by a real compulsion and a real need to express what was happening in that moment. And, you know, after my mum passed away, nothing else really made sense to me other than to commit to grieving and to discover what grief was. And I guess it was just a real, whilst that was painful in some ways and really cathartic, and I did discover things that I didn't know before. You know, I discovered that grieving was about loving someone and celebrating them beyond death, basically, and that's a really, really empowering and amazing thing to do. And whilst that starts from a very personal place, it's actually a universal thing, and that felt like a really important thing to share, and I didn't really have anything else that I wanted to say. So it's really, really great when that works out and you don't get to the end of that line and feel like, oh, you've made a horrible mistake and you should have just written all that stuff down in your diary and kept it to yourself, you know.
Yeah, I think it really beautifully documents at that space and time the sort of inclusion of those spiritual songs, which were, you know, quite important at that time, is, I think, that really gives it something, really gives the listener a sense of being a part of that experience, even, you know, even despite being quite detached. I just felt like I was very alongside that.
Mm.
Tell me a little bit about how that came along.
Those recordings, they just sort of complete the picture for me, really, because I just can't quite believe that I made those recordings. They were just recorded on my phone when I was at home. I'd gone back to lay my mum to rest on our ancestral land, and there was this moment during my mum's wake. My mum's funeral was a pretty sort of epic event. It sort of lasted about 5 days, and we had hundreds and hundreds of people coming through our home and paying their respects. And for 3 days, you stay up with the body, and, you know, people come and join you in your grief. And I'd been sitting outside with my dad by my mum's body, and I'd sort of gone into the house to get a drink or something, and I suddenly heard this sound, and it was really the first time that I started hearing music again. And it was my grandmother arriving at our home, and she was accompanied by these women who would sing for her. And something which I find really moving as well is that they continue to sing for her every day for 6 months, and that's how they help her through her grief of losing her daughter. And it's, you know, it's just a completely different attitude to grief and community and support. And I felt that in an instant in the sound that I was hearing, and it sounded so beautiful. And I remember just having that feeling that I have when I hear something that really excites me, whatever the context, whether it's at a gig or in a club or on the radio or a friend playing it to me, where I just want to share it immediately and I want to participate in it. And it was that exact same feeling. But I was just listening to these women, and one of them was playing a drum and playing this really unbelievably hip groove, basically, and they're just singing over this rhythm. And they came into our home and they completely transformed the atmosphere, and it was like light in darkness. And the thing that I noticed was that I couldn't help but participate. I just found myself dancing and singing. And they went up to my mum's body and sang over her for the rest of the night, and everyone danced, and everyone participated in a way that made sense to them. It was so kind of unifying, and something was restored to me at that point. Yeah. My belief in music returned. So to have those recordings, those actual recordings, stitched through our record is really a very significant thing for me. And again, it just binds the whole thing together. And it's something that we thought very carefully about. You know, I certainly, again, it was quite a scary decision to include something so personal.
Yeah.
But I had this moment, I think it was our last day of mixing, and I was sat at home, and this voice that had sort of guided me through this whole process was just kind of going, come on, you've got to do it. And I sat at home and I pulled up the recording against this introduction, and there was something going on with the tonality where they blended together just perfectly. I didn't even have to do anything, and
it was really
extraordinary. And, you know, it could have really not worked, but it just did, you know. The two worlds kind of came together.
I think that really comes through as well. I think that it's quite important that you have that, because what at first glance could seem as something very deeply melancholic actually is injected with quite a lot of joy, and there are kind of moments of delight.
It's really interesting that you say that, because that was something that I know that Dave definitely was really concerned about putting across, you know, that it not be this kind of a completely somber record. You know, there's definitely grief in there, you know, but also, like you were saying, about it being a celebration of a person's life, you know.
There's a lot of influence in there, you know, there is kind of gentle rock, there's a lot of electronica, there's even very faint sort of R&B influences that I could definitely gauge from it.
Yeah, I don't think we're really conscious of any of that stuff, really, and that set, I don't think we...
it's not kind of contrived in that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of relationship between inspiration and what you then create, in a way. I'm not going to say what I said to Jesse, because that seems to be everywhere. That analogy has to end about, yeah.
Tell us.
Well, it's just this thing that seems to be going around everywhere, basically. I had this private conversation with Jesse Ware, this record I produced, and, you know, she was talking about her struggles with songwriting, and I was like, you know, it's no big deal. You know, inspiration is like, you know, it's a little bit like eating, and then, you know, sort of writing is sort of a little bit like shitting. And it seems to be, and every time she speaks about me, that's all she ever says, is that I said songwriting is like shitting, which isn't quite what I meant. I was just like, you've got to let it out and not be like, you know, it's just got to be a process that you're in and like a flow that you're in. And, you know, eat good food and you'll do good poos, you know, and that sort of thing. But, you know, I do sort of believe that. Maybe you could find a better way of putting that than. But you know, I just think you're inspired by things, and they go through you. They pass through you in some way, and they come out different.
Intestine.
They come out. Yeah, they go through the creative intestinal tract, and they come out as your sort of version of that thing or whatever. And I'm not particularly conscious when I'm writing, you know, like, oh, I want a bit of this in here and a bit of that and a bit of electronica and a bit of whatever. But I love all of those things. I love electronic music, and I love R&B, and I love rock, and I love dance music. There's just all this stuff. And I think as for our band, we just wanted to have a space where anything goes, basically, and where we could sort of create our own language and way of putting music together.
That was David Akumu and Tom Herbert of The Invisible. You'll find a link to a stream of their new album, Risper, which is named after David Akumu's dead mother, on the Music Weekly page. It's out on Ninja Tune. Time for the musical wrestling match that is Singles Club. Rebecca, let's start with your track. That is Ruin by Cat Power. A lot of heat on Twitter about this track.
Yes, she was trending.
Everyone went mental.
Yeah.
When they heard it. You brought it in, Rebecca. Tell us what you like about it.
Well, I'm a massive, massive Cat Power fan anyway. I think she's got one of my favourite voices ever. There's just something really haunting about it and beautiful. But I haven't really enjoyed her last two albums. I didn't like the covers record that she did last time. And I thought the greatest, the one that came before, was a kind of patchy album with a couple of good songs, but it wasn't great. Because she'd been going in this sort of soul direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, to me, it felt a bit soulless, which was sad. But it seems like she's really pulled it together. I've heard the new album. It's very good.
Excellent.
This is one of the best songs on
it. Is this indicative of the sound of the album?
Yes, it sounds...
It's definitely a lot less obviously sort of soul influenced than the previous couple of...
I mean, it sounds to me, it's like the You Are Free era stuff. It's much more piano-led and, you know, a bit rockier. And Philippe Zadar from Cassius has produced it, and I think you can get a sense of that in there.
Definitely, in that background, actually, you can get a little sense of almost a bit like Phoenix or something like that. It's quite
a
sort of streamlined sounding.
Yes, and a bit of MOR guitar in there as well.
That's what those French guys love.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, it is a lot. I mean, you know, I don't wish to characterise, but they do. They love a bit of...
they like a bit of noodling.
But anyway, yes, I like that. I like that a lot. I'm not the world's hugest Cat Power fan. I saw her live once.
That can be a hit and miss experience.
Patti Smith, God, blimey.
Yeah.
I was with a friend of mine, Stephen, and he said, I was like, man, this is just agony watching this. I really feel, anyway, this is one of the better, you know, this is pretty, one of the better shows of hers that I've seen. Anyway, Kieran.
Yeah, I like her voice an awful lot. I thought it was really, really nice. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it because when it was trending, I had a listen and I thought, I'm not 100% sure. But actually, after a few listens, I thought it was quite nice. And it's interesting you talk about that almost reinvention or that move away from soul, because it's full of this geographical mapping within the song, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, it's all about kind of where she is physically and sort of geographically. And I think that kind of ties in quite nicely, which is sort of really different to what you get in kind of grime or hip hop, where, you know, all that geography is all about where you are right now. It's all about the present, whereas this seems a little bit like where she's come and where she's going. And
also, she's criticising herself. She's saying, I've been to all these places and it's making me unhappy, but all of these people have got lives going on that are much worse than this. Why is this not working for me?
See, it's like, I'm gonna throw a comparison here that possibly is before your time. I've Never Been to Me by Charlene. 1982 hit single. I've been to Paradise, but I've never been to me.
You know, I know that song from an episode of Absolutely Fabulous.
Really? There you go. Very similar. Very similar. That's great. That's knocking about as a download, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's free.
I think it's free,
yeah,
yes.
And the album's
absolutely
coming in September.
Splendid, splendid. Well done, Cat Power. Cat Power was once interviewed by a friend of the pod, Jude Rogers. And while she was interviewing her, Cat Power did a massive fart.
Did she?
And then whipped out a cigarette lighter and sort of wafted it around in an attempt to get rid of the smell. Yeah, there you go. So she was quite an earthy lady.
That kind of pop anecdote that you come to the podcast for.
Absolutely, you don't get this stuff, you know, anywhere else. The times that we'll get Jude in to talk about, we do a slot. Pop stars that have farted in front of me. Number one, Jude Rogers and Cat Power. Anyway, there you go. Let's move on swiftly to Kieran's choice. Pulling four wheelers out, but they talking about I put my four killers out. They gon' chalk them out. My bitches in a trap, they be styling in a hood. Might push your wig back, gotta be piling what you should. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, nigga. Wish you woulda, coulda figured. Pussy automatic target, wish you woulda pull a trigger. Wide receivers for them keys, the niggas still copping no chokes. Colombiano though, bitch, we get it by the boatload. He squeeze it like a toothpaste, and he tie me like a toothpaste. Said it tastes just like some Kool-Aid, threw it back just like a bouquet. I'm like Lottie. Lola Monroe, that track's called Getting To It, featuring Wiz Khalifa, who we didn't really hear there, did we? Did we hear Wiz Khalifa? No. But I mean, he's on it elsewhere. I like that, the return of the Mentasm synth sample, famously from Dominator, Human Resources rave track. There you go. I thought it was good. I thought she's got a great voice.
Yeah, I'm a huge Lola Monroe fan.
Who is she?
She is a rapper from Washington. She is the first lady of Taylor Gang or Die, also known as Taylor Gang, which obviously sits in that lineage of hip-hop crews like ASAP Mob and Odd Future and Most Dope and whatever, which is everywhere at the moment. She used to be a kind of video ho, hip hop honey, whatever you might want to call her, known by Angel Lola Love. And she
was she like a porn star? Is that
no, no, no. She featured in like one of Kanye's videos and Jamie Foxx's video. She's like absolutely beautiful when you see her, and she's got a big fat batty. And she's, you know, she's an actress and model, but then she sort of got into rapping quite seriously, and she was nominated as best newcomer for the BET Awards last year. So then in 2009, she released a few mixtapes, which were really critically acclaimed. Boss Bitch's World was my favourite one. And then she did Overtime, which with the Don of UK female rap, well, for female rappers, who's Trina. And she, that was an amazing track. And then she sort of got more and more popular, but then was sort of, you know, quashed by the Azealias and the Nickys and kind of a lot of the other sort of female rappers.
Why do you think so? She got a less striking image, is that the issue?
I think that she doesn't have that theatricality that someone like Nicki has. She hasn't got that sort of Harlem cool production that someone like Azealia has. Mm-hmm. And actually, when you hear this, the production is it's quite simple. Mm-hmm. And there is a commonality, that sort of, that sound is the same sound that's on Nicki Minaj's Shitted On Them track. That
Mentasm synth.
Mentasm, sorry, yep.
Hoover noise also.
But I just think that lyrically she's brilliant. She's got a real attitude. She's got a real feistiness, which I think that sometimes can sound a little bit contrived with people like Azealia. But no, I really like her.
Excellent. No, I like her too. Lola Monroe, Rebecca Nicholson, your thoughts, please.
Well, in theory, I should like this a lot because it ticks kind of all of my boxes. But I think, like you were saying, the simplicity of the production, it just sounds... like production-wise, it just sounds like a lot of tracks that have come out for the past few months. Like you were saying, Shitted On Them.
Yep.
Yeah, Did It On Them. No, it's called Did It On Them, isn't it? I'm just being rude for that is one of the lyrics, isn't it? Yeah, I'm taking the lyric as a song.
But
right.
I'm not just saying if you did it on them.
Yeah, I'm not just saying
Shitted On Them. Fancy calling it. Imagine if you did have a track called Shitted On Them.
It's called It is called Shitted On Them.
The clean version is Did It On Them. Okay. I thought I was just taking the rude bit and giving
Shitted On Them.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, it sounded like that. So something about it didn't blow me away, but obviously she sounds like she's got a really
and great voice.
Yeah,
really
she's
good.
In great voice.
Distinctive.
Filthy.
But I mean, you know, that's what you expect from these are the rappers. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Obviously, what SoundCloud? What is it about? Yeah.
Yeah, it's about on the internet.
What, legally, illegally?
Well, I presume it's gonna be out on Taylor Gang, which is the independent label which she's on, which is Wiz Khalifa's, and it has Juicy J and various other people on that. So I'm sure there's gonna be a release. But for now, you can find it on Taylor Gang or Die's website or on SoundCloud or
anywhere.
Okay,
marvelous. Let's finally move on to my track. We'll run to the future, shining like diamonds in a rocky world. Keep our skin like bronze and our hair like cashmere as we march to the rhythm on the palace floor. That's Pyramid by Frank Ocean, which appeared actually last week, but we didn't talk about it last week and probably should have done, which is why I brought it in. It's the first track from Frank Ocean's forthcoming album, which is his first proper album, I suppose, first album to be released on Def Jam, rather than Given Away for Nothing, as his previous album was. And you got to say, if you're going to stick something out before, you know, if you want to put like a marker in the sand and go, this is not going to be your normal R&B album that I'm putting out. This track is 15 minutes long. It goes through all sorts of different movements. The lyrics are totally off their tits. I mean, I've never heard anything like it in my life. The lyrics actually remind me, another peculiar comparison here, it's like if Cortez the Killer by Neil Young. A serious comparison in the way that they go from this big sort of weird historical epic and it's all about Cleopatra and the pyramids and all, and then by the end of it, it's all about some guy with a hoe. In the present day, who's been working the strip and all this kind of... and it's a bit like the same thing happens in... well, not the same thing happens, but a similar movement happens in Cortez the Killer by Neil Young, which starts out about the Spanish conquistadors and ends up sort of being about Neil Young and a lady. There you go. And it's just all over the place. It's got this kind of mental... If you look at the lyrics online, it says at the end of it, it just says air guitar. It's like a kind of Pink Floyd-ish guitar solo that goes on. It goes on about 3 weeks. It's audacious, exciting.
Yeah, completely uncompromising, which is something that I really like about it. The audacity of putting something out that's that long. And also, yeah, that sort of moves between being quite a club banger at the beginning and then sort of this R&B slow jam towards the end.
Well, I thought he'd gone upbeat. Thinking, this is fast for Frank Ocean, and then it slowed down. It's like, okay,
fine. Slow creep.
Slow jam, come back.
It's good, but I think it's about, more talking about different spectrums of decadence, isn't it? Of this sort of lofty Egyptian pyramids, which then move to a strip club where he's, throwing money at women.
Yeah, I think so. I thought maybe it was like moving to. We're analysing these lyrics quite deeply, which you don't often do on R&B records, because it's normally like, I'm going to stroke you up and down all night long.
Yeah.
And you don't need to analyse that.
Yeah. Real talk.
And I thought it was more about maybe the action moved from ancient Egypt to Vegas. Because there's that big hotel in Vegas,
the Luxor.
Like a pyramid, the Luxor. Indeed. And
I thought
maybe
that. Strip club.
You thought it was a strip club too?
Yeah.
Pyramids. Okay. Well, it could be either. Mm-hmm. But there you go. I mean, what a sort of a remarkable record in its own right. I mean, a very peculiar thing. I'd be intrigued to see how the Frank Ocean album does, because that Odd Future record, with the best will in the world, you seem to die on its ass. Mm. I mean, it was like it didn't, there was a big hullabaloo and, I went to America to interview them and all this kind of thing. And then it was almost like it never came out. It didn't have like a hit on it. It didn't seem to generate any heat.
But it's the same as Tyler's album. It didn't. Yeah. It didn't register after Yonkers. Really.
Yeah.
It came out and just died.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But I think Frank Ocean resonates on another level because he's got that such strong R&B thing happening.
Yes.
And I think that when he did shows here, it was everybody was excited. People that I knew that were hip hop fans were incredibly excited, and R&B fans and pop fans. Everyone wanted to go, and it did really, really well. Whereas I think that Tyler is a bit more of an acquired taste.
Yeah, and I think it's also less. It seems an odd thing to say about someone who's just put out a 15-minute long song with a massive Pink Floyd guitar solo at the end of it. But I think it's actually more commercial music than anything Odd Future do as well.
Can I chuck a tiny spanner into the works here and express my concern that he may have been hanging out with Kanye a bit too much?
There's
I'm
an element
slightly
of that.
Worried
yeah.
about the pomposity of it all. Like, in a way, I admire it, but I'm a little bit concerned that at this stage, this is what he's doing.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
But Jay-Z hasn't suffered from hanging out with Kanye.
That's true.
It's only done him good.
Mm-hmm.
I was intrigued. One of the riffs in it sounds remarkably like early 90s cheesy Euro house track, You Got to Know by Capella, which in itself was nicked from Happy House by Susan the Banshees, which was also sampled, of course, on The Weeknd, or whatever. So there you go. Susan the Banshees.
Susie Sue is informing
weird
R&B.
Kind of, it's the more cutting edge end of R&B.
But all the indie bands are being really inspired by Susie the Banshees as well.
Savages sound exactly like Susie the Banshees. I saw Savages name on the cover of a magazine the other day and I misread it, and for one amazing glorious moment I thought there was a hotly tip new indie band called Sausages. It's like, how great is that?
Do you remember that hot heat song Bandages?
Yeah absolutely.
I thought that was sandwiches. For a very long time.
It's interesting. So maybe it's Susie and the Banshees time.
I think so.
Think on, people. Okay, that just about wraps it up for Singles Club. West Coast duo Peaking Lights have a new album out by the name of Lucifer. That may sound somewhat sinister, but band members Aaron Coyes and Indra Dunis describe it as a record about playfulness, unconditional love, rhythms and pulses, creation and vibration. Unfortunately, obviously, if you play that quote backwards, it says, I am Satan's horny-handed servant. Drink from my cup. This proved too much for Emma Warren to resist, so she went to meet them.
Hi, I'm Indra.
And I'm Aaron.
Now, the last record, I understand, was recorded in 3 days for $200. How was the recording of your new record, Lucifer, different?
Well, 936 was recorded in 3 days, and Lucifer was recorded in 3 weeks, so it was quite a bit different. There was some similarities. Some stuff was written at home and recorded at home, mostly the drum and bass lines. But actually, a lot of it was written in the studio for Lucifer, and so that made it different as well. We really wrote, I would say, the bulk of it in the studio. And a lot of that was because, well, we had more time, but we also, because we have our son now, he was only 6 months old when we recorded it. So, you know, at home, there's not as much time to focus on practicing together. It's kind of changed how we write because we really need that time now. We need the babysitter so we can actually write together.
Is calling a record Lucifer something that might cause you a problem in the States with fundamentalist Christians, or is it just, you know, is everyone cool with that?
I mean, it might be a problem for some people, but I don't think those people are really going to be listening to us anyway. You know, things have multiple levels of meaning, and I think that that's what we're trying to bring attention to with that title as well. I mean, Lucifer originally refers to Venus, the star. Well, it's a planet, but it's the light that you see in the sky just before the sunrise. It's the last star in the sky. And I think it's a beautiful meaning, and you know, it's nice to, I think it's cool to bring attention to what it actually, the original meaning is.
Where else do you play apart from straight up gigs?
Art galleries, and we play a variety of shows. We play fests as well. But I think it's kind of cool because we seem to fit in a lot of different genres. So like, we recently played the Austin Psych Fest, and then the same weekend we played the Communique Fest in Boulder, which is an electronic-based festival, and then the Unsound Festival in New York, also very, like, experimental electronic. But then we also, it's like we fit in different categories, which I think is cool.
When I hear your music, I imagine there's some, like, crazy all-night rave where you're playing every week, where you've got, like, a mad chill-out room and all kinds of stuff. You know, does that place really exist, or am I just imagining it?
I think it exists. I feel like our early shows were like that in a lot of ways. I mean, just the house parties and basements where we play at like 4 a.m. or play for a really long time. And I think that when we started Peaking Lights, there was definitely, it's always kind of been experimenting with the different elements that we have, I guess. Like, we didn't really start off, we started off having really much more fractured like song structures. So it kind of was easy for us to play for 2 hours. Now that we have more of a structured song, we can still play the songs longer, but kind of have it more dialed in, like a shorter versions of it.
Yeah, the songs are a bit more written now, I think, than they were in the beginning. We used to just sort of improvise and jam, and you know, now we actually have written songs, but like Aaron said, they're kind of loose.
At the end of the gig, you offer people the choice of one of your tracks, Tiger Eyes, off your last album, 936, or an improv. Was that a brave thing to offer at the end of a live gig?
Well, actually, it was just sort of a disagreement between us. We were like, I wanted to play that song, Tiger Eyes, and Aaron was like, no, let's improvise something. And so we thought, well, we'll just leave it up to the audience.
So which are the gigs that you do where people would be like, yeah, improv, improv?
Well, sometimes it's just, we just kind of do it. Well, we did it in Paris. But, you know, it's funny because sometimes you do it and then you're like, ooh, maybe we shouldn't have ended like that. But
yeah, it's a bit risky to do the improv because sometimes it goes amazing and sometimes, you know, it just sort of, you know, falls flat a bit. So, you know, it is a bit of a risk. But, you know, when you're really in the moment, it can work really well. Yeah. And, you know, it's fun. It's fun to take that risk, you know. I think it adds, it keeps it alive. Yeah, keeps it interesting.
So, can you tell us what role cassettes, kind of analog cassettes, play in your live show and in the music that you make?
Last time we were in England, we had a bit of a different setup. So it was with a wall of amplifiers behind us instead of just using the sound system. And this time, it's more using the sound system at the club without a wall of amplifiers. Yeah, it's like to work better. So now it's more just using the cassettes as doing like a live kind of like dub mix to the music, as opposed to before, whereas I was playing guitar and I was playing keyboard too. Now I'm just doing like a dub mix every night of it, as opposed to playing guitar and having our sound guy do the mix. It's more, he's just keeping me under wraps and making sure I don't blow the system up.
Does it help to make music that sounds like it's kind of associated with the West Coast of America if you're not from the West Coast of America?
I don't think that we intentionally do that, but Aaron is from California, and I lived in I've lived in California for like 12 years. We did live in Wisconsin briefly. A lot of people still think we live there, but we actually moved back to Los Angeles. I grew up in Wisconsin, so that's where that comes from. And I feel like wherever we live, we would probably, I feel like we would be creating the same thing, because this is sort of what our minds are doing when they become connected.
Can you tell me a bit about the 936 FM, Lucifer FM mixtapes that you were creating before both albums and generally creating, I guess?
We always did the mixtape thing, but we had a record store and vintage clothing shop together when we lived in Wisconsin. And we used to just make mixtapes and put them in the store. And then
we'd sell them for like $5, you know.
Yeah, I don't even think that much. I think it was a couple of bucks. But
we probably gave away most of them.
Our store got broken into, and our old computer didn't have the sound card or whatever to plug your records into. And then when we got there, our new computer had it. So then we just started making them on the computer and then putting them online for free.
We have in our house an insanely huge collection of music now, so it's, you know, it makes sense that we would make mixes to share with people.
So I guess, because I understand sometimes you might spend a whole day in a record store, like literally listening to everything, I guess you need to do something with that amount of records.
Yeah, I mean, it'd kind of be a shame to just hoard it. I'm a collector, but also at the same time, like, want people to hear awesome music or make it available, you know. So I just think that's important, you know. It's cool too, because it feel like it gives reference to like what we're doing. If someone can hear like what we're, I mean, you know, you're trying to like walk in someone's shoes or something like that. But it's good to share. It's something positive to share.
If you were to tell us something about one of the tracks on the album on Lucifer, which track would you tell us something about, and what would you tell us? Maybe one each.
Beautiful Sun is dear to me because it's about Miko. And I wrote it when he was 3 months old about, this is my song for my son.
It's same thing, you know, it's just like getting the guitar tone on that song took a day, just because I just wanted it, you know. You just, it's like something you're like, this is for my little dude. I want it to sound just right. It's got to sound just right. Everything's got to sound just right. And I think it's a good little song for him.
That was Peaking Lights talking to Emma Warren. Their new album Lucifer is out now on Domino. That's it for this week, and indeed that's it until September. We're going to head off into the ongoing monsoon that promises to be the British summertime. I'm going camping this weekend.
Where are you going?
Oh, somewhere in Sussex, I don't know. The wife booked it, I've no idea.
Is it glamping though? Are you going to be...
No, we actually got a tent.
Oh no.
You know, we borrowed a tent.
I'm going to see some experimental Belarusian theatre, so I think you might win.
Just. but we're going to be around and about, aren't we, Kieran? We are going to be at...
WOMAD. Bestival.
And Bestival. Podcasting from there. Well, my thanks to Rebecca for joining us. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure as ever. We will leave you with a track recorded at the latest of the Guardian New Band of the Day live sessions at the Barfly in Camden. Here's Baby Blue by We Were Evergreen. Have a great summer. Bye-bye.
Guardian Podcasts are partnered with audible.co.uk. For a free download, be sure to check out guardian.co.uk/audible, where Guardian listeners can choose any audiobook for free. See the page for more details.